Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Monday, 26 September. I am Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Mia Kruger. I'm curious, what, market's down 9%, our market, in the last 2 weeks, trading at the lows for the year. Where is she finding value in this market? We chat with Archer and CEO Martinus Fisser, their listing process and growth prospects in Australia. And then chatting with Craig Gradage from Garage Mulder Investments, the Old Mutual BEE scheme. I want to get some sense around details and value. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning markets from MoneyWeb. SA gets investment grade rating from new ratings agency. It's a Joburg-based agency called Sovereign Africa Rating. They're confident in our ability to repay our debts. I don't argue with that point, but they are in the minority there. Business Day, UK Chancellor starts with bang by boosting the rich. Lots of tax relief, trying to manage the cost of living crisis, and that as sterling is at its weakest level in 35 years against the dollar. Morning markets, red. US, we saw the S&P and NASDAQ off 1.7% on Friday, just off the lows for the year. Asia's red with Sydney down 1.25% and Tokyo down 2%. Commodities red overnight. Gold, $1,647. Brent, $85.72. Platinum, $857. Palladium, $2,084. Rand, $1,802. Last time we saw plus 18 was during the early pandemic. Bitcoin, $18,900. Top 40 opening call, 210 points down. That's about 0.33%. That as Tencent trades up 4.33%, and I can't find any reason for Tencent going gangbusters.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Mia Kruger from Kruger International. Mia, appreciate the early morning. As I mentioned in my intro there, JSE down 9% in 2 weeks, low for the year. We've got US indices just off the lows for the year. A bit of a spooky place out there for investors. Or perhaps the flip side is a bit of a shopping mall for investors, a sale on prices. I'm assuming you're in the latter camp, and then the question is, where are you looking for value in the current market?
Good morning, Simon. Yes, I mean, everything is basically in the red if we're talking stocks this morning, year to date. And South Africa is looking, you know, not as bad as we've seen in the rest of the world. When you look at the S&P 500, we're talking about the market being down about 22% year to date so far. So as you say, it looks like everything broad-based is on sale. We have to be very cognizant of where we see sort of market growth, because everyone is talking about a recession coming to the US and most possibly spilling through to the rest of the world due to all the issues we've seen around energy prices skyrocketing, and then of course the limitation in food supplies globally due to the war that we've seen between Ukraine and Russia. And that will most definitely impact the emerging market sectors as well. And we see that locally, all of us have been bracing for the interest rate hikes. If you have any sort of debt, then that probably has hit you. And the fact that we have seen inflation rise in South Africa, along with a very strongly deteriorating rand, which goes hand on hand here. So broadly speaking, I think it's very important to realize that portfolio construction is one of the key focus areas that you have to stick to in times like this, where you don't know, you know, how far the market will fall further. Do you want to pile in all at once now, or do you want to keep your broad-based diversification? And that's the stance that we've taken. We've kept, as you know, I've said this over and over again, we like a very broad diversification at Kruger International. And we've kept that. And there are most definitely areas in the market that have a more defensive prospect. And then, of course, some areas that look very, very cheap. And just to focus on one of the areas that do look very cheap is most definitely the tech sector in the US. If you look through all the areas in the market, the tech sector has by far fallen the furthest. And many of the companies that we refer to in the tech sector are actually companies with an annuity type of income stream, where it's very, very difficult for any other sort of company making use of these services, say, for instance, using the Microsoft suite, to just say, okay, we're cutting costs in our business, we're going to cut our Microsoft suite. No one's going to do that.
Yeah.
It's impossible to get your business running these days without a very sort of a strong backbone of technology that you already leverage on. That has helped all of us over the last couple of years to limit our other areas of costing in businesses, whether it is you don't have to employ as many people that you probably have to in the past, and you can just leverage off many, many benefits of technology. So technology is probably going to be some of the last cuts in the businesses when we see a recession somewhere in the future in the US, because it's not if there's going to be a recession, it's just when there's going to be a recession, because we all know that there's most definitely through cycles in the world going to be a recession again at some stage. Whether it's going to be mild or deeper, that we don't know. It's all speculation at this stage, but it looks like many of these tech companies are much better positioned to not be hurt as much. Also, many of these companies in the tech sector, and I say again, you have to be selective, it sits on a lot of cash. So they can really weather the storm to a great extent if the economy turns down. So we will see cuts in earnings prospects. Mm-hmm. We've already started seeing that over the last two earnings quarters. But this sector does offer, I think, a big opportunity for you going into the future. If you're a long-term investor and you want to buy and hold, then this is where you can start looking.
And I take your point, and particularly in tech stocks. This is not, they're in a different place from where they were in 2008. They're in a different place from 2000. They're cash positive. They're some giants there, and they're not going away anytime soon. Mia Kruger, Director, Kruger International, as always, appreciate the early morning.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanley Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with OUTsurance CEO Martinus Visser. They had numbers out to end of year-end, June. Gross written premiums up 14.4%, operating profit of 13.4%, headline earnings down 10%, and ordinary dividend, I stress the ordinary, down 17.5%. Martinus, appreciate the time. First, if we can step back, Rand Merchant Investment Holdings, that they've confirmed they're essentially going to swap their JSE listing with OUTsurance. You'll send a letter to shareholders, I think, in a month's time, and that process could be done by the end of the year.
That's correct, Simon. So it boils down to an effective listing for OUTsurance, but it's not a traditional IPO. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll retain our existing shareholders, for which we're very glad, and it's a low-cost effective way for shareholders to do it. And I mean, we're not really in need of any capital. It's a highly cash-generative business. So for us, it's the right thing to do. I think a good thing is always that also that we have been managing the business like a listed entity,
yeah.
A strong governance, strong independent boards, and you'll even see our integrated report. We believe we uplifted that a bit, and it's an ongoing journey, but we think it's an exciting one, and we're ready for it.
Your point around not needing capital is an important one, and you mentioned it a couple of times in the results presentation. You're expanding businesses, and in fact, you're looking to go into a third as yet unnamed country, but you can largely do that from the cash flows that your more mature business are generating.
That's correct. I think that's the beauty of short-term insurance, that it's so highly cash generative, and I think also we're responsible in the way we approach the growth in not trying to conquer the entire world at once. In the case of Huey, it was quite a large investment relative to our own size. Mm-hmm. And I think subsequent investments are smaller in relative terms to our overall size. But we do require that pipeline of new ventures to sustain the growth. But we're quite selective in terms of that. And also, we don't want to overdo it so that it gives the dividend an unnecessary haircut.
Yeah, and the point you made, and I think you mentioned the phrase twice during the presentation, not betting the farm. Let's move to the year under review. A tough year for insurance, for underwriting. Floods in Australia, where you've got the UE business. Floods locally in KZN. Riots last year, though I suspect riots was more commercial, and that's still a new space for you. But these sort of particularly climate change events are something which is part and parcel of being an insurer.
Absolutely, and we've witnessed that over the course of the last 24 years, that upward trend, and we really reached an all-time high, both in South Africa and in Australia, in terms of the natural peril events. As such, I mean, you have to price for it, you have to manage capital carefully, reinsurance, but we're also working with regulatory authorities to see sort of what mitigation can be done, and around building regulations, mm-hmm. and things like that, just to ensure the sustainability and affordability of home insurance, because there's definitely been real growth because of the things you mentioned. And in South Africa's case, there's also the issue of load shedding affecting contents insurance, buildings insurance to a slightly lesser degree.
Is that when power comes on and suddenly my TV goes pop and doesn't work? I mean, is that material in your life? I mean, you had some high-stage load shedding at the end of the period, and of course we're sitting in it again right now.
Absolutely. It has become material. It's been steadily creeping up the last few years, but the last year it really jumped.
Yeah.
We see a very clear correlation between periods of high load shedding and these surge claims. But I think the good news for consumers is that there is protection that's quite affordable available. So if they do their research, you can install surge protectors, which give you the necessary protection and help to keep your insurance affordable in the long run.
Yeah, I recommend that. I've got it on all my plugs. I've never had to claim on it. One of the new areas you're moving into is commercial insurance, business, property, business, vehicle. And that's required different channels for you. You've had to expand your broker base, which historically OUTsurance was a call center. You would phone in. You didn't have the traditional broker.
You're absolutely right. And we learned that lesson over time. Initially, we assumed the whole commercial market will also become direct. But the reality is, as products become more complex and they require more trust, you really need a face-to-face person to help with advice and sell that product. And for that reason, we had to start our own distribution force to get access to the higher end of commercial market. Because with the direct market, we covered really the really small businesses, the typical guy with a bucky and a business. And we increased that distribution force up to about 600 agents now.
Oh, wow.
And it's been quite successful in driving that premium growth. The premium growth of that OUTsurance agent or broker channel has been in excess of 50% the last year. So it's very exciting for us. We have less than 4% market share in commercial insurance because we haven't been in all the channels. And that's a big opportunity for us to try and see if we can get that up to the 15-odd% market share that we have in personal lines.
A last question, and I was trying to gauge a sense of the local OUTsurance operation in size compared to the Australian UE, and there's moving parts, and some of those moving parts are spending on your rolling out of agents for the commercial business, the different claim structures. What is the sort of comparative size between the two?
The premium split is currently 53% Australia and 47% mm-hmm. South Africa, so they're slightly bigger. An interesting stat is people don't realize, but the Australian market is more than four times the size of the South African market. And there's really two reasons. So just their middle class is really the 26 million people, whereas our middle class out of the 60, probably more 7-8 million people.
Yeah.
And it's only the middle class that's really able to afford insurance to insure their assets. So even though the business is of similar size, their market share is quite a bit less or smaller as a percentage than what OUTsurance's market share is. But that's also a great growth opportunity. We have 5% market share of the Australian motor market, and we believe we still have very strong runway left in that market as well.
I gotcha, because obviously huge market share in South Africa. We'll leave it there. OUTsurance CEO Martinus Visser, appreciate the time today. And that's our poll today. Outsurance, I mean, a new listing, although it didn't directly list, obviously, it's RMI, it will become Outsurance. There's a process that will happen. The question is it a stock you're investing into? Is it a stock that you're interested in? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Craig Gradich from Gradich Mohura Investments. You want to chat the old mutual, I think it's called the Bula Tesla BEE deal. Craig, appreciate the time. The deal was announced last month. It runs until 24 October for people to apply. What are the sort of high-level T's and C's?
Yes, good morning, Simon, and to your listeners. I think before we people get too excited, it's Bula Tesla. And not Bula Tesla. that could set expectations off in the wrong direction. So high level, the public are invited to participate in the public element of the deal. Mm-hmm. So there are three elements, a staff deal, a community trust, and a public deal. The public deal or the public component is buying 1.3% of all mutual. At a cost of 10 rand per Bula Tesla share. And, that whole Bula Tesla structure will look to raise, around 840 million, rand to buy the shares. Mm-hmm. So the public are putting in effectively 15% of the equity. All mutual is matching that with some facilitation at 15%. And the remaining 70% will be funded by debt, which is being provided by all mutual themselves. And, the minimum 100 shares, so it's a minimum investment of 2,000 rand. For those investors who cannot afford the 2,000 rand, there's a scheme where they're allocating a certain, I think it's 10% of the deal, for small investors to buy 1,000 rand worth of shares and pay 100 rand a month for those shares.
Okay.
So it's a fairly good deal structure. One thing that's quite unique about it is that we can't really say up front sort of the value of Bula Tesla, because the price at which it buys the old mutual shares is not known yet. So that's one area of interest, but despite that, it's still a fairly attractive deal.
Yeah, I mean, the debt component, 70% standard, obviously, I imagine that's going to get paid down with dividends, and we should see good dividends. I mean, no, there's T's and C's, but Old Mutual's a relatively stable company. This isn't a miner who might almost go bankrupt one day.
Well, look, I mean, they suspended the dividend in 2008.
Yeah.
And then I think the interim dividend got suspended in 2020, with COVID. So that risk is there. It's not sort of non-existent. I mean, there's two examples from just the last 12 years. But outside of those two fairly exceptional circumstances, they've been a very good and regular payer of dividend. The deal structure is such that, you know, there'll be between sort of 4 and 6 all mutual shares behind every one Bula Tesla share.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, okay. That pool of dividends doesn't need to be very high to start eating into the debt. There will be a trickle dividend that's paid by Bula Tesla to shareholders. So 15% after the payment of tax and operational costs,
mm-hmm,
will go to shareholders in the form of a dividend, and the other 85% will then be used to settle debt.
Gotcha. And there is a lock-in, as I understand, it's 5 years, and then they say they will list on an exchange, and it probably be the JSE, but not necessarily. But you are in for the five-year period.
Yes, so that's fairly standard, mm-hmm. that you have a five-year lock-in term. There's a 10-year funding term, and also another unique feature is that they don't have a defined empowerment period. So I think it gives the board some flexibility to respond to conditions 10 years from now after the funding period is up to say whether, you know, they'll unwind those shares or whether the scheme becomes evergreen or whatever the case may be, or whether it needs to be refinanced, which I think is clever because, you know, Sasol, MTN, Zakhele, a couple of the other deals, they would have found that sort of wiggle room sort of quite handy, and you saw some of them having to do new deals and sort of fairly restructuring and incurring expenses in that. So quite clever in that point of view.
Yeah, perhaps learning from others. So the actual structure itself sounds great. I suppose the point being, and this is always the point, is that you only do this deal if you think Old Mutual is a good five-year investment. I mean, that ultimately is at the crux of it. Deal's good, now you've got to like Old Mutual.
100%. African banks deal, investors lost everything. The Media 24 deal, you didn't lose everything, but you got a fairly average below market return. Mm-hmm. So you got to have a view as an investor on the underlying company. I think there's a lot of value built into via the structure.
Yeah.
So, if the Old Mutual share price is still, you know, kind of 12, 13 rand a share in 10 years' time, but the dividend has settled enough of the debt, investors could still make a 200-300% return just by the virtue of the fact that there's a lot less debt in the structure, so that equity component's a bit bigger. You saw that with MTN Zakhele with their first deal, where I think investors made about 150% over the period, but the MTN share price was flat.
Yeah.
So it was just the deal structure that had a bit of value baked in.
We'll leave it there. It's Craig Gradage, Gradage More Investments. Always appreciate the insights. That's it for today. Friday, we were chatting with Wayne McCurry about the Reserve Bank raising rates, obviously on Thursday. Prime now at 9.75, back pre-pandemic levels. Question we asked was, how much higher do you think it'll go? Over half of you said 11%. A quarter was saying 10.5%. That's where I've put my flag. And the rest of you saying it was too high. Hopefully they have finished raising. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.